The views and opinions expressed here are those of the guests, and are not the official position of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
The desire to create is one of the deepest yearnings of the human soul. We each have an inherent wish to create something that did not exist before. The more you trust and rely upon the Spirit, the greater your capacity to create.
I'm Nancy Hansen, and this is Everything Creative. This program explores a wide range of creative ideas, talents, and experiences through interviews and group discussions. Join me today to hear the winning stories from our Pioneer Day short story contests and an interview with the writers. I'm Nancy Hansen. This is Everything Creative. Today we're going to be talking to the winners of our Pioneer Day short story contest. Starting off, we're going to check in with Murray Kester, who is one of our winners, and she is on the phone. Hi, Murray.
Hi.
Tell us where you're calling from.
I am calling from Anna, Illinois, which is in southernmost Illinois.
Oh, nice. Well, so great. First of all, let me congratulate you and thank you for entering the contest. And, you know, congratulations for being one of our five winners. It's exciting.
Thank you. It's a great honor. Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about you. Are you a professional writer, or how long have you been writing, or is this your first try?
Well, that's a hard question to answer. Right now in this season of my life, I'm primarily a mom. I have five young children. The oldest is 12, and my youngest is 3. So right now my life is pretty much preempted with taking care of my children, but I have always loved to write. And I have written for as long as I can remember, but mostly just for my own enjoyment. I've not made a career of it, though I did study English literature at BYU and graduated with a degree from BYU. It has just been something that I have done for the love of writing, and this is actually the first short story contest that I've ever entered, really the first real attempt at serious fiction writing that I've ever done, so I'm super pleased.
Well, it's a fantastic story. It's called The Fiddle. Will you tell us just a little bit about it? We're going to listen to that soon, but we wanted to have you just kind of recap it for us and tell us a little bit about how you came up with this idea.
Well, I came up with the idea of course, the short story contest was on the topic of the early pioneers, and such a broad range of experiences and stories to draw from, and I really thought about it for a long time. But I guess what was foremost in my mind is within the year I had read Elder Lund's book, The Fire of the Covenant, which was about the story of the Martin and Willie handcart companies. And it stayed with me, and it was something I found myself reflecting on all the time about the sacrifices. Particularly, I think it's so moving what the handcart pioneers were willing to give up. And probably the thing that stuck with me most from that whole book that I read was the fact that they were limited to 17 pounds of possessions, and how I just reflected on that a lot, how symbolic that is for us, though we may not have to cross the plains, that there's not room in our lives for everything. And what are we going to be willing to give up for the Lord? I thought about that over and over again, and so I figured that was the message that I wanted to tell with the short story. And then, of course, comes the process. Well, how in the world do you put that idea that you want to convey, and how do you put that into a story? So I knew I wanted it to be about somebody who was in the handcart companies and about having to make the sacrifice, the limit of the 17 pounds, and it just kind of started developing. And I do have ancestors that they were not in a handcart company, but I do have ancestors that immigrated from Wales. So the story takes place on the Iowa frontier as the Saints are getting ready to leave, but the main character is from Wales, And that came from my own background and my own love and fascination with Wales and the little bit that I knew about the saints from Wales who immigrated, because there were many, many, many immigrants that came from Wales, and a lot of them were of the handcart companies. So,
yeah, and Gwen Morgan, is that a real name?
It is actually. I did some research. It's not the name of a real person, but I went back and did some research on the internet and actually found a list of the names of ship manifests and people who were in the handcart companies. So those are real Welsh names. There wasn't a particular person named Gwen Morgan, but Gwen was a common first name for some of the women, and Morgan was a common Welsh surname. So, yeah, a real Welsh name.
Well, and Gwen's desire to be able to take her fiddle with her, and how that story develops. It's a beautifully written story, and just really gets to, I mean, it gives you such a vision of what it must have been like for those people. So we're excited to give that a listen. Thank you again so much for entering the contest, and congratulations.
Thank you very much.
The Fiddle by Mireille Kester. Would it weigh too much? Gwen Morgan wiped the prickling sweat from her forehead. She fanned herself as she watched the captain and his men moving down the line of handcarts, weighing bundles. The woman beside her spoke, the lilting Welsh sounding cool and green in the heat. Did you know when you left, Gwen, that you'd be worrying and waiting to find out if everything you own is less than 17 pounds? No, replied Gwen, her mouth tweaked in a wry smile. The missionaries rather skipped that part. They surveyed the small piles on the dusty ground. I don't know what else we could possibly abandon, the older woman said. We need it all, her voice broke. Gwen's arm was instantly around her. Don't you lose heart, Anne Kinsey. Faith has brought us this far. It'll surely take us beyond this trouble and on to Zion. Still hugging Anne, Gwen considered the horizon, the faint ruts of the trail they would soon travel, barely discernible in the bright waving grass. This hot, wide land was so different from the rolling, misty hills she loved. Gwen looked at her pile and sighed. I never knew how close to nothing 17 pounds is, she said, trying to make her voice light. It only sank. How much does your fiddle weigh? Gwen shrugged. I've wondered 100 times. I pray you can take it, Gwen. I too, Sister Anne. 100 times I've prayed. You've such a gift, and it cheered us so on that awful ship. I know it's the dearest thing now that... Her voice broke off. It was time to be weighed. 2 pounds over, said the captain. Truly? Gwen said, dismay rising. Scales don't lie, he said, businesslike. Something's got to go. He lowered his gaze quickly as he saw Gwen's eyes pooling with tears. Not just you, he said, his voice now soft, regretful. Gwen followed his gaze. All over the camp, weary people were sorting mounds with dejected resignation. When we pull out, this place will be littered with treasures. If it won't keep you alive, it has no place in the cart. He touched Gwen's shoulder, sympathy in the gesture. Sacrifice brings blessings, sister. He hesitated momentarily, then touched his hat and moved on. Sacrifice. So easy to say, but a reality that tortured and burned. Today, she hated that word. When was it enough? Hadn't she pled for only one thing? Gwen crumpled to her knees and snatched up her fiddle, as if it were in danger of abduction. In the heat and the sweat, kneeling beside all that remained to her on earth, Gwen wept into the dust. She had sacrificed everything, her family, her sweetheart, her wealth. She was born of a privileged Welsh family, yet here she sweltered on the edge of the American wilderness, heartbroken and alone. Please, Lord, her heart cried out, anguish racking her. She gulped for air in the stifling heat. Please, Lord, not this too. All her losses stormed in her mind. On and on she wept, not stopping until she was spent and still and empty. Then, softly, words spoke to her mind. If thou art called to pass through tribulation, the Son of Man hath descended below them all. Art thou greater than he? Instantly her torment eased. Did she intend to abide in the covenant? Was Zion worth the sacrifice? There was only one answer. "Everything I loved has been stripped away until nothing remains but thee," she whispered. "Thy will be done." Tenderly, she placed the fiddle aside. Through the heavy ache of her submission, Gwen felt something delicate, sacred, palpable, moving upon her. An unmistakable stillness descended and rested. She did not move for fear the feeling might wing away like a startled bird. Different impressions, happy ones, now flooded her mind. A missionary giving her a Book of Mormon, well-wishers crowding the shore at her baptism, shipmates dancing on deck as she played a rollicking jig, gentle Anne sharing her family, beautiful evidence of all her gains. "Carry on," came the whisper. "Carry on." In her mind's eye, she now saw herself walking alongside a handcart, carrying her fiddle case over her shoulder, a doubled rope making a secure shoulder strap. Of course, she couldn't cart her fiddle to Zion, but she could carry it. Gwen exhaled in awe as the exquisite realization spread over her. The breeze caressed cool and tender against her tear-damp cheek. Joy more powerful than her anguish lifted her to her feet. Faith and hope sang out in her voice, "Let's find some rope, Sister Anne. I'm going to carry my fiddle every step to Zion."
Well, next up, we're going to hear A Message for Adelaide by Sadie Starling. And we're lucky enough to have Sadie here in the studio with us today because she is from West Jordan, Utah. Thank you, Sadie, for being here.
Thank you.
And congratulations on being one of the winners in this contest. Tell us a little bit about you and where you are in life and what you're doing and how much writing you do.
Well, currently I'm raising three children under the age of 10.
Oh.
And I do that full time and love it. I've been writing since I was 14 and have been studying the art of writing since then and have been working on a novel currently, but that's as far as I've gotten, except for this writing contest. So
you heard about the contest and thought, I want to try that.
Yes.
Yeah. Do you have an interest in pioneers?
Well, yes, in a way. Well, why I was interested in this was because recently my kids and I went to beekeepers and studied bees. They were very interesting to me. And so I thought it would make a good story.
Yeah. Well, tell us a little bit about your story. Just give us a little overview.
Adelaide is a young girl, and she has recently lost her mother and struggling with the overwhelming task that she has had to add to her life. And she ends up praying and receives a message through the bees.
Interesting. And what is, do you have any pioneer heritage in your background? How did you bring the pioneers into this story?
Well, I don't have any pioneers in as far as relatives go, but I do have modern pioneers. Both of my parents are converts to the church, and so they have been the example in my life and of my siblings. So,
yeah, what a great way to look at it. And so when does this story take place?
When they are crossing the plains, about 1856.
Great. Well, we're so excited to hear. It's a well-written story. Thank you so much for entering the contest, and congratulations on winning.
Thank you.
A Message for Adelaide by Sadie Starling. Adelaide Green made an excuse for her younger brothers and herself to gather firewood for the evening meal, having spied several other children heading toward the cottonwoods near the bank of the Platte River. Without waiting for her father's reply, she quickly grabbed her twin brothers by the hand and hustled across the blue-stem prairie grass to catch up. Spotting their friends, Aaron and Adam broke free, rushing off to join them. Adelaide did nothing to stop her brothers. Gathering firewood was the farthest thing from her mind. Had her father looked up from his work to meet her gaze, he would have seen and recognized the silent battle that raged within her 10-year-old heart, adding much to his own grief. Thinking upon this, her pace slowed, then stopped. She peered back at the camp, particularly upon her father. He continued in his hard labor, forcing the energy of his own anguish into his work. Adelaide pursed her lips. It had been over a month since Mother had been laid to rest along the trail, and along with the heartache, Adelaide struggled with the daily tasks of sewing, cooking, tending to the inside of the wagon, and that of watching her two lively brothers. In addition, the weather had been cold and dreary, concealing the sun and leaving the roads muddy. miserably muddy. Only this morning had the sun finally overtaken the sky. And although Adelaide loved the feel of the warm rays thawing her, it did little to reverse her physical and emotional fatigue. Her father, as good as he was to her, was not the one to bear her burden. Turning back toward the river, she offered a silent prayer, seeking succor from the only one who knew the raging battle within and the weariness she felt. I miss Mother dearly, especially now that I realize the great work she accomplished day after day. I'm tired and miserable. How can I go on serving in such a huge capacity? She petitioned. Silently but mechanically, she joined the others at the bank, bending to pick up wood wherever she saw it, waiting for a new vigor to surge within. Look at all the wood we've gathered, Adelaide! Aaron and Adam pulled her from her solitude, holding up their arms to display their findings. We're headed back. Adelaide nodded. I'll follow shortly. Her brothers were the last to leave the area. Alone, she found a seat on a large stump. Her eyes fell upon the shimmering water of the river as she set down her wood. In the distance, dark cumulonimbus clouds warned of a long night filled with snapping lightning and torrential rain. She shuddered, drawing her hands to lock around her arms as a slight breeze teased the bottom of her skirt and pinafore apron. It was then that she heard it, a low hum off to her right. Turning, her eyes locked on a beehive not 3 feet away, positioned between two protruding roots next to where she sat. Having had her share of stings, she instantly stood to find another spot to sit, but as she moved away, the recollection of her mother caused her to hesitate and return to the hive. As she cautiously crept forward, the buzzing intensified. She bent over so she could be at eye level to admire the workmanship of the bees. In view was a large honeycomb with at least 30 bees moving upon the perfectly shaped hexagons, filling and capping the few remaining empty cells. A twinge of sorrow pierced her heart as she recalled their hive back in Nauvoo and how her mother had explained the types of bees and their different duties. Her attention was drawn to the countless bees returning, one narrowly buzzing past her ear. She looked upon them, marveling at the intricate dance some performed as others gathered, wanting to learn the route to the best nectar. Studying the busyness of this hive, she recalled how most bees only lived for 6 weeks, but their hard labor had provided her with many sweet memories of her mother and had helped to satisfy her sugary cravings. Like the warm amber liquid pouring over a biscuit, the spirit washed over her and she knew the bees were God's answer to her prayer. Her mother could no longer be with her, but Adelaide could keep her memory alive through her work and service to others, a legacy she knew her mother would want taught to future generations. Smiling through her blurred vision of tears, Adelaide slowly backed away, whispering a prayer of thanks for the lesson learned. She would do it. Adelaide! Coming, Papa! Strengthened by what she'd discovered, Adelaide wiped away her tears, picked up the firewood, and ran to hug her father.
If you're just joining us, this is Everything Creative, and we're listening to winning entries in our Pioneer Day short story contest. Next, we have Marta Murray on the phone. She's from Colorado. What is the town you live in, Marta?
Berthoud.
Berthoud, Colorado.
Berthoud, Colorado.
Well, thank you so much for letting us talk to you for a few minutes about your story. And first of all, congratulations, and thank you so much for entering the contest.
Oh, I'm so excited about it. Thanks.
Well, yeah, we love your story, Let Go of the Wagon. Tell us a little bit about you, first of all, where you are in your life and maybe a little bit of your writing experience.
Well, I'm a grandma of two little toddlers. I have 4 big kids. My daughter and her husband have the 2 babies. And then I have 3 boys, Tony, Devin, and David. And Tony and Devin are return missionaries, and David is serving in the Quito mission currently. And my husband and I live in Berthoud, Colorado.
Great. And have you been writing long? And how did you, why were you interested in entering this contest?
Well, this is just a fascinating, I'm so fascinated by the process that brought me to this. I've never written, ever.
Really?
Even in school, I did not enjoy writing. But I took a class in February, and I felt compelled to begin writing during this class and a few things that led up to it. But I knew that I needed to start writing. So a really good friend of mine has been kind of the impetus to going. And I found this contest online, and I thought it really just spoke to me. I knew right away what I would write about and how I would make it all work. And of course, it took me a lot of sweat and hours to really write it. But the contest just kind of called out to me, and I knew it was something I needed to try.
Wow, that's so great, because it really reads like you just sat down and told this story. It's so great. Tell us a little bit about the story. Is it a true story? Is it something that you have thought about for a while, or something that you've heard?
No, it's a personal experience of mine. My husband and kids and I love to whitewater raft. We have been doing it for years. And one summer, my husband and I were on the Arkansas River with some friends. And I had the experience that Erica in the story has. I was bumped out of the boat. And as I grabbed the rope to jump back in, my husband looked me in the eyes and really firmly told me to let go, because the boat was about to hit a boulder. And I didn't know it. I didn't know why he was being so, make me let go of that rope. And I had to swim through the rapids. It became a really powerful spiritual experience as I was doing it. I knew Heavenly Father was taking care of me. And it's been a powerful thing that I've had in my life for many years, because I don't know, it was just such a spiritual thing. I knew Heavenly Father was taking care of me as I was going through.
Wow. And having to, you know, I'd want to ask questions like, why do you want me to let go? If you just probably...
Well, I did. Actually, it happened so fast, you know. And
you don't have time for that. You just have to look at him and trust. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Wow.
So I did know how the story was going to end, and I just didn't know how to get it there.
Yeah. Well, it's a very sweet story of trust and faith, and not too far from probably what the pioneers may have really experienced. And it's pretty cool that mm-hmm. it's a personal experience you were able to turn into a short story. So
it was fun to do it.
Yeah, congratulations. So great. And that's fun that this is kind of your first try. So now do you have the bug?
Yes, actually I do. In the middle of writing this, I thought, why am I doing this? I'll never do it again. But in the accomplishment of it, the finishing of it, it was thrilling. And I've got a couple of other things that I'm working on now, too. So, yeah, it's going to be a fun process for me, I think.
Well, good. Thank you so much again for entering the contest. Now we're going to listen to Let Go of the Wagon by Marta Murray.
There were just enough clouds in the sky to offer small relief from the hot sun as we made our way through the tall grass of the east pasture toward the Weber River. Aaron and I were both teenagers and proud of it. Now Father trusted us to take the horse and wagon to cut grass on the opposite side of the river. We had lived here only a year, and already it was more like home than any other place we had been. How glad we were when we heard that Brigham Young wanted our family to help settle the Weber Valley. The bank sloped gently here, making this an easy place to enter the river. We knew we must be careful, because just a mile downstream, the Weber River narrowed and became rapid. Our horse, Molly, was a good mare, unafraid of even deep water, so as we drove the wagon across, we joked and laughed. The warm June weather had caused the river to rise in the last week, and the splashing sound of the quick water around us was louder than usual. Molly, who was in deeper than she anticipated, slipped as she placed her hoof on a slick rock. She stumbled for a second, then quickly caught her footing. The wagon lurched a bit and hit a bump, which knocked me out of the wagon into the deep, rushing torrent. When I finally rose to the water's surface, I was surprised to see the wagon right beside me. I grabbed the side of the wagon box and tried to lift myself inside, but my soaked dress was heavy and weighed me down. The river pulled at me, taking me downstream, but I held on with all my might. "Aaron, pull me in," I yelled. I wasn't sure if he heard me above the rushing water. Aaron seemed busy with the horse, his sun-bleached hair plastered to his head with perspiration. I called again, "Aaron, help me!" He turned towards me and then looked to one side. His tanned face was suddenly pale. Something was horribly wrong. Although he was still in front of the wagon, I heard him shout to me, Erica, let go of the wagon. Swim. What did he mean, let go of the wagon? I was filled with uncertainty. I needed to get into the wagon, not swim away from it. If I let go, I felt sure I would get trapped in the narrows, in the rapids. Then, Aaron was right over me. With his clear blue eyes, he looked straight into mine and pleaded, "Let go of the wagon, Erica. Trust me. Have faith. Let go now. You'll have to swim through the rapids." The question was still there, but I trusted my brother, so I let go. Once more, I was dragged under the water. As I struggled to the surface, I felt rocks pushing against me. I heard the loud roar of the rapids as I was pulled along closer to the fast-rushing water. "Heavenly Father," I prayed, "I'm going to die. Aaron told me to swim. He is my brother, who I love and trust. I trust Thee. I have faith in Thee. Aaron told me to let go. Help me swim through this." The water was moving quickly. Rocks were everywhere now. I could feel the water rushing forward, taking me more quickly than ever through the narrows, over the boulders. Yet, I was calm. A peacefulness swept through my heart. I was aware of a presence that could only be Heavenly Father. I felt Him watching over me, and I was comforted. I knew that everything would be okay, that I would be safe. Finally, above the roar of the river, I heard Aaron call, "Erica, grab the rope!" The rope sailed through the air above my head and splashed into the river ahead of me. Oh, what a happy sight! Although exhausted and bruised, I reached for Aaron's rope. I had to swim quickly to get it because the rope was heavy and was sinking rapidly under the water. Somehow, I grabbed hold and hung on while Aaron pulled me to shore. We collapsed on the riverbank. Eventually, I caught my breath, and I asked Aaron why he had told me to let go. "When Molly slipped, the wagon began to float downstream," he explained. "Your side of the wagon was slipping toward a boulder. You were in such danger. I knew I couldn't pull you into the wagon quickly enough. I knew you had to let go." Aaron and I learned a lot that day. Mostly, we learned how much our Heavenly Father trusts us, and we learned we can always trust Him and our elder brother.
And now we have Emily Boyle on the phone from Seligman, Arizona. Hi, Emily.
Hi.
Hey, first of all, congratulations on being one of the winning entries in our contest, and thank you for entering.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we wanted to just talk a little bit today about your story and have you give us a synopsis of your story. It sounds like it may be based on some kind of historical event. Can you tell us about your story?
Yeah, the story that I wrote, the setting is in the Piedmont Valley, which is in northern Italy, and it's the story about a young married woman that's pregnant, and she gets to know the missionaries, and she gets to know the message that they have to share, and she is not a Catholic, as you know, most Italians, but she's of the Waldensian faith, which have quite an amazing, interesting history in Italy itself, and pretty amazing one of religious freedom.
How do you know so much about this, first of all?
Well, I served my mission in the Milan, Italy mission.
Okay.
And my sister-in-law sent me a copy of a story of one of the Waldensian LDS converts that emigrated over to the Salt Lake Valley in the 1850s. And her name was Susanna Carden. And that's really what started the interest was her story.
Okay. I think that I'd never even heard of the Waldensian Creed before. And even some of the pronunciations of the names and, you know, it's just very interesting that way.
It is. There's a lot of history there. There's a lot of history in the Waldensian faith. Just the persecution. Elder Snow, actually, when he learned of the people, felt that because of their similarities in the way that they had struggled with religious freedom, that perhaps he might find some success. And he did find, that was the majority of the success that he found was with the Waldensians. They were persecuted for their beliefs, for not conforming to some of the local religious traditions that were of the day. And so they had days like on April 24th, the Day of the Martyrs, they had troops of soldiers come into the towns in the Piedmont area, and at a certain designated time, all the soldiers woke up and massacred everyone.
Wow.
And this was just because of their beliefs. So their history is one that I thought would be worth telling a story on. And I actually named our first daughter after Susanna because of the way that she had such faith to leave her country and her family and to come to the Salt Lake Valley.
Yeah, wow. So is this a story that you've had, you know, in your mind that you've wanted to write or to tell?
No, it actually took a life of its own once I started, because Susanna was actually single when she emigrated. And just as I started writing it, I remember hearing from some of my friends that are more knowledgeable in the writing category, that once you start writing a story, it'll take on a life of its own. And that's what it did. Just as I was writing, things would come and things would click and things wouldn't click. And so.
Yeah. So did you write the story for the contest, or is it something you had previously written?
I did. I did a lot of research on Susanna Carden and on the Waldensians and the silk industry in Utah, because there was a connection with that back when I think about 7 years ago. And I presented it in a student symposium at BYU. So I had some of the background already ready, so mm-hmm. It made it easier to just pull some of the images from my experiences. I don't have any ancestry with in Italy, but I claim them because of my mission.
Sure.
So.
Yeah, I think you can do that. Well, it's wonderfully written. Tell us about, have you been writing for a while?
No, that was the first story that I've written. I've been studying and finishing my bachelor's degree at BYU, and I just finished an oral history course where I wrote a lot of my personal history. So that's been my most recent writing. But
wow, well, that's amazing. You definitely have a gift. So thank you so
much. Thank you very much.
Thanks for sharing it with us, and congratulations on being one of our winners.
Well, thank you very much. I'm very honored.
We're now going to listen to Lux by Emily Boyle.
I awoke before dawn to robins chirping in the trees. Josue had not returned. Corbin had been sick for days. I opened the window shades and the Piedmont Valley revealed itself below. I gazed at the Po River. Its course tied a graceful green and blue ribbon to the golden hills beyond Turin. This is my home. This is my country, an alpine refuge for my people for centuries. The morning sun shone brightly off cliffs and trees above the swift creek. The cold water numbed my ankles where I stood. I could feel the tender drumming within my womb as I reached for the next piece of laundry. Sounds of women conversing nearby mixed with the water running musically over rocks and into the large washing pool. Gently rinsing the blue silk blanket, I thought back to when I was 12. On April 24th, the day of the martyrs, my mother gave birth to my youngest sister. My siblings and I had kept the fire stoked, the water warm, and fetched linens when asked. The others fell asleep waiting beside the fire, patiently listening for a tiny cry. None came. When Father came out, I peeked into the bedroom and saw Mother laying there, curled up with her head almost touching her knees. My aunt sat beside the table at the window, holding a bundle wrapped in the blue silk blanket. Father crossed the room, our family Bible in hand, and sat down beside me. We named her Lucille, Father said softly as he added her name to ours on the front page. Do you understand why? Yes, Father, because of the Waldensian creed, Lux lucet in tenebris, the light that shines in the darkness, I replied. He turned to the book of 1 John and read from chapter 1. This, then, is the message which we have heard of him, that God is light, and in him is no darkness at all. But if we walk in the light, we have fellowship one with another. Father looked up. Susanna, life does not end at death. God's light is eternal. We are eternal. If we follow his light, no matter where we are, we will be on the path to our eternal home. The sound of Josue's rushed footsteps pulled me from my memories as I turned to see him running towards me. He's better! Susanna, he's better! Josue exclaimed, out of breath. Relief burned in my chest as we hurried down the path which led to the Malin home. The two men I had seen in Torre Pellice's main square stood as we entered the home. Corbin lay in his bed, sleeping peacefully. His face no longer feverish as it had been for the last week. My mother-in-law, a stoic woman, stood precariously peaceful, gripping her husband tightly. I could see where her tears had rubbed against the collar of his sun-bleached shirt. Both stared intently at the two men. Josue's father, Felipe, spoke. Susanna and Josue, these are the two missionaries we told you about, Elder Lorenzo Snow and Elder Yabez Woodard. We shook hands. I noticed Elder Snow's kind face as our eyes met. It's our pleasure, Elder Snow said. Josue pulled two chairs from the dining table and set them beside the bed. I sat in one. Felipe lovingly led his wife to the other. Elder Snow spoke. Felipe and Angela, the God of Heaven has done this for you. The moon hung brightly in the sky when Josue and I made our way home, filled with the light of the Holy Spirit. Josue's hand held mine as we walked the path. The message of the elders rehearsed itself in my mind. How could it be that a prophet directed by God was gathering his people in a foreign land? Before retiring to bed, Josue and I knelt to pray, asking for knowledge and confirmation. I felt peace. That night I had a dream. I was sitting on a wooden crate, holding a tiny baby. I could feel the rhythmic motions of large waves rocking a ship. She was smiling. The robins chirped outside. Josue was there. I stood to open the window. I could hear Father's words in the morning breeze. Susanna, God's light is eternal. We are eternal. If we follow his light, no matter where we are, we will be on the path to our eternal home. Home, I thought, tenderly caressing my womb. Josue's arms wrapped around me. Together we stood watching the sunlight begin its peaceful deluge across the dark valley below.
Next up, we're talking to John Anthony Allen from Vancouver, Washington. Thank you, John, for taking time to talk to us for a minute today.
Oh, my pleasure.
Tell us a little bit about you and where you are in your life.
In January of 2009, I graduated with a Master of Fine Arts in Writing from Pacific University. And I've always been interested in writing fiction, and this Mormon Channel contest was really interesting opportunity to apply my skills to a Mormon topic.
Tell us about your experience in writing and how you became interested in this contest.
Most of my writing has been on a novel that I'm working on. I served a mission in Estonia, which is part of the former Soviet Union. And I've been working on a novel that's set over there. It's about a young man who in America finds out that his grandfather was Estonian and he wanted to go back there and learn more about him. So most of the time I do longer work.
We love your story, Crickets. Can you tell us how you came up with this idea? Maybe give us an idea of the background of your story.
My wife actually pointed out that the Mormon Channel was looking for stories, and I thought it was an interesting opportunity, especially since it was such a short form story. And so I just thought about what event from Pioneer Days I could write about, and for some reason the crickets popped in my head, and I thought that would be a good setting. And then I wanted to kind of emphasize the nature of the pioneers, that they were so diverse. And so I thought I would make them Scandinavian in some way and use some less typical names, not so English names.
Well, John, thank you again so much for taking time to talk with us. Congratulations on being one of our winners. We love the story. It's great.
Thank you very much. It's a very big honor for me.
And now we'll listen to Crickets by John Anthony Allen.
Another one had gotten into the house, a six-legged monster, black, the size of a man's thumb. Its long antenna quivered in the cold morning air. It scuttled up the side of the baby's crib. Using his finger, Hendrik flicked it to the dirt floor of the cabin. He kicked it out the door onto the front step, and then stomped it with his boot. Hendrik was young, just 9, but already tall. He had inherited his mother's gray eyes and light hair. His broad, thoughtful smile came from his father. He shuddered. There they were in the distance, covering the valley floor like an army. They were mostly inert, for now. But they would be on the move again once the sun warmed them up. He had the same dream every night. Swarms of crickets pour through the chinks in the cabin's foundation, climbing the walls and onto the ceiling. The baby screams. Everyone crushes the things with brooms and shovels and feet until the ground is slick with them. But there are too many. Hendrik's father, eyes smoldering, turns and points a finger at him. Hendrik's gut twists with guilt. Somehow he's the one who let them into the house. Hendrik jumped. Something was on his head. "Come inside and eat, love." His mother ran a hand through his hair and pushed him towards a rickety stool. There were dark circles under her eyes. She hadn't slept in weeks. Most nights the family fell asleep while his father read aloud from the book of Joel in the Bible. "I will restore to you the years that the locust hath eaten, my great army which I sent among you, and ye shall eat in plenty and be satisfied, and praise the name of the Lord your God, that hath dealt wondrously with you, and ye shall know that I am in the midst of Israel, and that I am the Lord your God." Hendrik's brother, Einar, shoved a bowl of mush into his hands. "Hurry up, father's been at the trench for an hour already." They hoped that a shallow trench around their fields filled with water would stop the crickets. He downed the mush in two bites, then pulled on his wide-brimmed hat. "I'm ready. Let's go." Hendrik stepped gingerly along the path to the trench, trying to avoid the crickets. Einar strode grimly ahead of them, not caring about the slime that covered his boots to the ankle. Their father barely halted when he saw them, just nodded at the two spades on the floor of the trench and resumed swinging his pickaxe. They jumped in and set to work. Their father's pace was grueling, and soon they were covered in sweat and dust. Their muscles, tempered by the thousand-mile trek from Missouri, strained against the rocky soil. But going was slow, and they advanced only a yard or two per hour. Hendrik did his best to keep up. At midday, he felt lightheaded and nearly vomited, but he pressed on. Not until his fingers went numb and the spade slipped out of his grip did he stop to break. He slumped against the wall of the trench and splashed water on his neck and face. His legs felt rubbery and useless. He hauled himself out of the trench anyway and scanned the fields. His hands trembled. "Look!" he croaked. Einar straightened and looked, his jaw clenched. The things flowed over the ground like a flash flood. They were already in the fields, crushing the stalks of wheat and munching the young grains. Behind them spread a swath of desolation. Hendrik fell to his knees. His eyes burned. It was too late. The trench was no use. Their crops were lost. Here, past the edges of nowhere, there would be nothing for winter. A hand gripped his shoulder. His father wiped a strand of hair out of his face and knelt stiffly on one leg. His hands, rubbed raw by the pickaxe handle, smeared blood on his pant leg. He took a deep breath, teetered, and nearly tipped over. Hendrik had seen his father this exhausted only once before, when he returned with the battalion. It had taken 3 days of rest before his father could get out of bed. This exhaustion added to Hendrik's fear. "Father," he choked, tears rolling down his cheeks, "what else can we do?" Hendrik's father stared at him for a long time, expressionless. "Come, Einar," he finally said, pointing to the earth beside him. "Kneel with us. The Lord did not bring us all this way to fail." Hendrik nodded. He wiped his nose on his shirt cuff. "I will pray." From above came a seagull's plaintive cry.
To read the Pioneer Day short story contest entries, visit our website at radio.lds.org. You've been listening to readings of the Pioneer Day Short Story Contest winning entries and interviews with the writers on Everything Creative on the Mormon Channel.